Underwriting for AutoLine This Week is provided by...
We are IAC Group, a global tier one supplier of vehicle interior solutions that span the rapid, ever-changing needs of today's industry. From interior design and engineering to manufacturing and delivery, IAC, our heritage, your advantage.
From the AutoLine Studios, here is your host, John McElroy.
Welcome to AutoLine This Week. We've got a terrific show for you today. My special guest is Dr. Walter Keep. He's just come out with a book here called Bridge Builder. This man is an expert in building German-American relations. He's an entrepreneur. He's been a politician. He was the treasurer for the Christian Democrat Party in Germany. But for purposes of this discussion, he also served for 21 years on the supervisory board of Volkswagen. I think I've got that right, Dr. Keep. Is that right? 21 years?
21 years.
The oldest serving board member in the history of the company.
Yes.
Welcome to AutoLine.
Thank you so much. Thanks for the invitation.
It's great to have you here. And also joining us today are Mike Ramsey from the Wall Street Journal and Christina Rogers from Automotive News. Great having the both of you here, too.
Thanks.
Dr. Keep, I think we have much to talk about, but let's go right now to the present in Europe. In the automotive industry, we see the European Union economy slowing down dramatically, and this is especially impacting automakers who have too much capacity, too many plants, too many workers. But as you know, it's very difficult to close plants or lay off workers. Opel is especially being hurt by this. It's losing all kinds of money. How do you see this being resolved, or can it be resolved?
Well, the fact of the matter is that some companies are doing very well and other companies are having problems. Volkswagen, Mercedes, and BMW have very good figures. They're still enjoying growth. Others have problems. And the future, of course, is interesting in the sense that the domestic market is one thing, and the export is the second thing. And as far as Volkswagen is concerned, we are living to see the miracle that China becomes a bigger market for Volkswagen than Germany was for Volkswagen. And the Chinese development is by far over. New plants are being built. And the next plant that is going to be built is going to be one which is not where the others are, but quite over in the west of China. But in general, the auto market situation in Europe is not as dramatic as you have put it, I think. There are problems. Opel is a big problem. And we have some difficulties to understand why GM is not acting more with more intervention in this in order to stabilize, because the Opel products themselves in Germany are absolutely competitive.
But what General Motors will say is, I think, that it still has too much capacity, but it is unable to close plants and lay off workers. Do you think it will simply get to the point where it's such a crisis that they will be able to close those plants and lay off people, or is it simply going to have to accept this as a fact and lose money for years to come?
Well, I certainly hope that the plants will remain, and because they're good plants and they have excellent workers. The staff of the Opel workers in Germany is absolutely competitive with the standards of Volkswagen and Mercedes. So there's no reason why they should fail. And what we think Opel needs is more support from GM.
May I ask, when you say more support from GM, what it makes me think is that it appears from a competitor's standpoint, from Volkswagen's standpoint, General Motors could be supporting Opel in a way to drive their sales higher, but they're choosing to sort of let Opel struggle and perhaps their Chevrolet brand, which is doing better in Europe, grow. That they maybe are choosing to let Opel kind of die on the vine and let Chevrolet grow. Is it, am I interpreting what you're saying correctly? Or?
Well, then that's I think that's a terrible picture that you have just mentioned, because this would imply, of course, that the workers of Opel would have to face the end of their employment, and because Chevy and Opel are two different things. And if you want to switch from Opel to Chevy in Germany, you are then, of course, in a different class. You're competing with Daimler-Benz, mm-hmm. and, of course, also with Audi. And that would not help these people. You know, the big concern in Germany is that these workers are beginning to doubt that America's GM is still behind them.
So on that point, what can be done? I mean, what kind of intervention would you like to see?
Well, this is not for me to counsel General Motors on what to, but just to support these plants in Germany by giving the workers the security that General Motors, perhaps with changes, perhaps with new lines, perhaps with new product, stands behind them. And that is what I find is missing.
I find Volkswagen a fascinating company to watch, especially right now. It is so powerful. As you know, they want to set a sales goal of being number one in the world by 2018.
Yeah.
When you look from a revenue and a profit standpoint, Volkswagen already is number one,
yeah.
and by a wide margin, yeah. too. And yet, it's a complicated company that has almost essentially family ownership with the Porsche and the Piëch families. How is this resolved at the board level, at the supervisory board level, where you have shareholders and everything, but essentially family control?
That's the $64,000 question. Indeed, a very difficult one, because the family owns both. And the family bought Volkswagen. And many, many people in the world, internationally, watched this takeover process. Volkswagen is taking over Porsche. And they invested an incredible amount of money in buying Volkswagen shares. And then, of course, were somewhat disappointed when nothing really happened. And there are many, many suits pending against Volkswagen. And the question is how this is to be solved. And during the period where one finds a solution, the unification, the takeover and the implementation of Porsche in Volkswagen will have to wait. So it's not a very pleasant set of circumstances, but I think it's going to be solved.
I'm on this line. John brought up that Volkswagen has been extremely ambitious in terms of stating its goals to grow, and there's nothing wrong with that. But it seems like in the auto industry, the more ambitious you are and the more set on growth you are, the more likely it is that you are going to be the next company to have the grand fall. Are you concerned at all about the tone that Dr. Winterkorn has struck with this ambitious goal, and what has happened to other companies that have been very ambitious like this?
By ambitious goal, you are referring to the becoming the number one.
And the targets they've set in the United States for sales for Audi and Volkswagen are so ambitious that they almost are unmeetable unless, I mean, I don't know how that they could meet them. I mean, it would be extremely challenging for them to meet them, but it seems like they're putting dramatic pressure on sales growth around the world, and that other companies have done this and it's not been, the outcome hasn't been good.
But sales growth, of course, the precondition for sales growth is manufacturing.
Mm-hmm.
And we are right now in the middle of finishing a huge plant in the United States,
mm-hmm.
which will be the basis of car production for the American market. And I have not seen or heard any over-ambitious statements from the management of Volkswagen as to the position in the U.S. market. They're just working very hard, spending a lot of money. It's the most expensive factory that I think has ever been built. And I have also watched and seen how Volkswagen spent a lot of money trying to build a plant and create circumstances for the people in the area that improve the living in this particular area, mm-hmm. enable people to take a job with Volkswagen by offering them better housing, et cetera, et cetera. So it's I think, one of the most interesting operations of a German company in America that I have ever seen.
Can we talk a little bit about the Chattanooga plant? In your book, you had mentioned the experience at Westmoreland and the Americanized Beetle. Well, it seems like Volkswagen's making another go at this. They have opened a U.S. factory, and they have a product that is tailored to the American market. How do you think, I mean, they're going to sidestep some of the pitfalls that they made with the first Americanized Beetle?
The pitfalls are registered. Any member of the board of Volkswagen is not only allowed to, but is demanded to look at what was done wrong in the past. So I cannot say that they'll never make mistakes again, but they have a lot to learn from.
Such as? What kind of lessons have they learned from that?
Well, I mean, the experience that we have, for instance, made in China, which was really a totally new field, a totally unexpected climate. And when I first heard of this, when I first came to Shanghai, where the partner with whom we negotiated this deal was the mayor of the city of Shanghai. By the way, a man who later ended up as prime minister of China. But, I mean, a mayor of Shanghai talking to a German company about building a huge plant in Shanghai and produce cars for the population of China, which at that time had only one means of transportation, that was a bicycle. I mean, this was such a revolutionary step, and as you see and as you can observe, it worked. It was successful.
Dr. Keep, as you know, but maybe some of the audience doesn't, in Germany, by law, the supervisory board has to comprise 50% labor representatives. I believe, I think this is right, that in every factory in the world, Volkswagen has some sort of labor representation for the workers, but not in the United States. How do you think this is going to go? The UAW, the United Auto Workers here in the U.S., would keenly like to organize one of the foreign transplants.
Yes.
I would think Volkswagen would be a prime target of theirs. As a former supervisory board member, how do you view this issue?
Well, you know, I would personally, I was there. I participated in the introduction of co-determination in Germany, and I tell you, it was incredible. The factory owners, the shareholders, most of the politicians screamed. And with tears in their eyes, says, "Well, this is the end of capitalism. This is impossible." By a marginal majority, it was done. And today, we just have an economic crisis behind us. And what happened in Germany and the big companies? No unemployment. Why no unemployment? Because the employment was maintained. The job was not lost, but the work hours were reduced during the crisis in order to meet and to get the liquidity that was necessary to overcome the crisis. And when the crisis was over, the work hours. So that our experience with this co-determination are really absolutely positive. But, you know, when you speak to an American or to a Brit about co-determination, you get no applause, and you don't even get any interest.
Mm-hmm.
They think it's wrong. And we've done it, And it is the custom in Germany. And when I had a session with the Communist University of China the other day, which I visit every year when I visit China, I brought with them the English translation of our co-determination law. And I explained to the audience what it is all about, and that at the end, co-determination means that the workers, along with the shareholders, on a 50-50 basis run the company. And I said, perhaps this is an idea that are also interested for the Chinese Communist Party. And they didn't quite know what to answer, but they were very interested. And I still haven't had a reaction from my direction.
But going back to the U.S., how do you think Volkswagen will resolve this representation of the workers? Do you think it would invite the UAW in, or would it form its own internal work council?
That is a possibility. I don't know whether there are any plans yet. But if the demand is there, it would be, I think, a very good idea to think about it. And I will, I've made a mental note to pick this up with my friends when I get back.
Okay. I was curious, since you spent so much of your time in government relations, do you think that the European crisis right now is putting pressure on the idea that the EU is a good body for to represent all the nations there in trade, because they're able to effectuate trade, but the individual economies are so different, and in crisis it's been shown to be kind of a tenuous model. So I'm wondering, what's your take on the EU right now as Europe is in crisis?
We talk about the crisis, and then, of course, there is a crisis, undoubtedly. But we have taken steps to not only prevent the crisis to increase, but steps which will not allow for crises in the future by doing the following. And this is, when I explain it to you, is perhaps a step in the direction of a new form of the Volkswagen or any other company that has a future, namely that we are now in the European Union observing and controlling and influencing the financial conduct of the member states. You could put it in very simple terms. We've created a European finance minister. He's not called that, but he sits in the center, and the states, be it Greece, be it Spain, be it Portugal, when they submit the budget, they have to submit it at the same time they submit it to their national parliament. They have to submit it to this board. And the board will review this budget in line with the thinking that the indebtedness of the respective country, does it permit these ambitious goals or doesn't it? And should something be different? And should this be corrected? And this is the work of Chancellor Merkel, and it was passed. So you could say that we have laid the first stone for a European government.
As I was going to say, is this the United States of Europe?
Yeah, which I think are still years and years away. But I find it significant that the first step in this direction happens and succeeds. It was done. It's been accepted by the member countries, done in this very, very touchable field of balances and budgets. And it is, I think, a sign of the seriousness and the long-term thinking that guides the European Union, so that all these many, many articles that we see in the press and the headlines, and are we going downhill and is this the end of it, I think we're overcome by this decision, which had its place was caused in Berlin and transferred and explained to all the member states and accepted.
I'd like to ask a question about China. Yeah. You played a role in helping VW gain a foothold there. I was just wondering what you're thinking about the market now. Do you still, how has the company's position, competitive position changed as you have all these other automakers trying to get in?
Yeah.
And do you foresee any headwinds in that market for VW and for Audi?
Yeah. There is, of course, competition. Chinese companies, a number of Chinese companies, national Chinese companies, without foreign participation, I mean, that are manufacturing cars. And, of course, General Motors is there, Ford is there, the whole world is there. And we Germans, with perhaps a little tearful smile, had to state and to admit that the biggest market of our firm, Volkswagen, is no longer Germany, but is now China. Mm-hmm. And new plants are being built. And it is also very important to note that the manufacturing in China increases, but it is also very interesting to watch the importation of cars. Mm-hmm. If you go into a Volkswagen dealer's shop in Beijing, you see cars where there isn't any hope that they will ever be manufactured in China. And I wondered, and I found that the import of expensive cars, like the Audi A8 or the Porsches, etc., is assumed proportion which nobody forecasted. That is, of course, mirrors the economic development in China. Mm-hmm. China has succeeded in a relatively short time to increase the standard of living of about 400 million people to a level which is comparable to Europe or America. Mm-hmm. That is a tremendous step. China has now millionaires. China, on the other hand, has a population of 1.3 billion people. And the remainder that still has to be taken care of, these 900 billion, consist of the farmers and of a very special creed of people, namely the traveling workers. And I have know a lot about it because I had personal contact with the family and particularly with a child in this contact. These traveling workers have no insurance. They go from building site to building site. They have to travel on their own. They have to pay for their travel. They seek a job when they get the job because, of course, labor is needed. And then when the time is over, they're sent back, and then they look for another site. If they have an accident on the plant, if they are injured or disabled, tough luck. So this group, the farmers, I think, will be easier than these traveling workers. The farmers are beginning to get additional rights. Also in the direction of, I call it property rights, which for a Chinese communist to admit, of course, is difficult. They find another formula for this. But it's happening. And when I am in China now, let's say during harvest time, and I remember when years ago the Chinese farmers with bicycle with a trailer would pedal through the night to the next market, that's all over. I mean, they're much better off than they are. So hopefully they will be able to solve the problem of these two remaining groups of people in a satisfactory way.
You know, you mentioned how these imported German cars are doing in China. I think that shows the power of brands, because all those imports have a 25% import tariff on them.
Yeah.
And the BMWs that are made in the United States and the Mercedes-Benzes that are made in the United States that are exported to China have an additional tariff put on them because the Chinese are retaliating against the United States. And still these German vehicles sell with no problem whatsoever. We're down to the very, very end. if you could just very quickly advise American car companies on how to build those kinds of brands, what would be the key thing that you would tell them?
Well, look at the other products. Take a look, see what they offer that, if they adopted it, could put them in the same position.
You know, sometimes the most complicated things come down to the easiest answers. And Dr. Walter Keep, I think you just gave us one of the simplest answers I've ever heard before. But we're getting down to the very end here, as I indicated. I want to thank you so much for having come on AutoLine. What a fascinating discussion. It's been terrific having you here.
It's my pleasure. Thank you so much for your time.
And Mike Ramsey with The Wall Street Journal, Christina Rogers with Automotive News. I want to thank the both of you. And, of course, want to thank all of you for having tuned in. And join us again here next week for AutoLine This Week.
Underwriting for AutoLine This Week has been provided by...
We are IAC Group, a global Tier 1 supplier of vehicle interior solutions that span the rapid, ever-changing needs of today's industry. From interior design and engineering to manufacturing and delivery, IAC, our heritage, your advantage.